You're listening to Get Yourself the Job with Jennifer Hill, only on LA Talk Radio.
Well, happy Monday, everybody, and thank you so much for tuning in to Get Yourself the Job with Jennifer Hill. Today, I'm very excited to have on the show Lisanne Stromberg. After a successful career in marketing and advertising, Lisanne left the business world frustrated by the lack of support for mothers in the workplace. She pivoted to become an award-winning journalist whose work can be found in the New York Times, Fortune, Newsweek, Salon, and other high-profile media outlets. Now, Lisanne is back to her business roots as CEO and founder of PrismWork, a culture innovation consultancy. She and her team partner with companies, leaders, and advocates to innovate the workplace so that the next generation is not forced to choose between work and family. A sought-after speaker and moderator, Lisanne has inspired thousands with her talks on work and life and integration, as well as corporate talent innovation, disrupting the traditional career paradigm, and empowering women in the workplace. She has been seen on the stages of South by Southwest, TEDx, the 3% Conference, and more. And today, what I'm excited to talk to her about is her new book, Work, Pause, and Thrive, How to Pause for Parenthood Without Killing Your Career. It is deeply reported that with extensive science research and cutting-edge data collected from nearly 1,500 women and through over 186 first-person interviews, in it, she reveals how trailblazing women have disrupted the traditional career paradigm to achieve their personal and professional goals and provides readers with a blueprint for how they too can integrate their kids into their career. Lisanne currently lives with her family in San Francisco. Thank you so much for joining us today, Lisanne.
Oh, Jennifer, it's an absolute pleasure to be here.
It's so much fun to talk about this subject. I think I told you, so I have a copy of your book on my desk, and one of my colleagues comes up and she says to me, oh my gosh, Jay Hill, is there something you want to tell me? Are you pregnant? And oh my God, we had such a giggle about it because I said, oh no, Molly, this is actually a guest I'm going to be having on the show, but it is relevant even for somebody like me. I'm in my late 30s. I spent my 20s and my early 30s building a company. And so I was so excited to have you on the show. How did this become a topic that you were passionate about?
Well, really, it came about after personally seeing my own journey pivoting a number of times, as you shared in my lovely bio. Thank you for that extensive bio. What I found was in my own journey that the idea of the linear career, kind of the lockstep up to the top, just wasn't a reality once I had had children. Then as I was moving into my role as a journalist, I was interviewing so many incredibly successful women who themselves had actually downshifted or worked part-time for a period of time, not forever, but for a period of time, and then relaunched again to great success. And I thought, that's a narrative. After Lean In came out, I thought, that's a narrative that's not happening. So many millennial women kept approaching me and saying, look, I'm committed, I'm ambitious, I want to have a great career, I'm really trying to make this happen. And I think I want to have kids, not sure, but I think, and it doesn't look like it can happen, so what do I do? And I thought, you know, there's something here. Let me go out and find out the truth. And that's what came out of it. Work, pause, thrive, how to pause your parenting without killing your career.
That's great. And so what did you learn from your research with, it was 1,500 women that you researched, is that right?
It's true. I actually ended up interviewing, had first-person interviews with 186 women, total trailblazers, and then surveyed. Because there was no quantitative data, I actually went out there and did a survey of 1,500 women to find out how did they navigate this. The two requirements for the survey was that we wanted people who had gone to college because we want to understand how women with, you know, that should be completely invested in their careers, what were they doing? And they had to be moms. Like, what? How did you do it? And I was absolutely astonished, Jennifer, to discover that of the 1,500, 72% had actually downshifted or completely left the paid workforce. Now, let me be clear. These women reported them, yes, three quarters almost. These women reported themselves as being highly ambitious. In fact, 63% self-reported as very ambitious. And many of them actually had graduate degrees. So they were very invested in their careers. But what they told me and what they said in both personal reporting and also in the research was that the workplace just didn't allow them to thrive. they couldn't bring their best selves to the workplace because of the way the workplace is currently structured. So the only solution they felt they could come up with was kind of this nonlinear path. It's, I'm going to innovate on my own. And this was a story that I thought was completely belies what we hear about. If you're going to take a nonlinear path, what happens? Your career dies. But that was absolutely not the truth for many of the women I surveyed and interviewed.
So what percentage of them then went back to work once they had children?
89%.
Interesting.
89%.
How long after, were there any stats on that about how long after they had had children that they waited to go back to work?
Sure. So that was really interesting as well. So what was surprising to me is it broke down across the spectrum. The women who had stayed out no more than 2 years or had downshifted for no more than 2 years ended up having the easiest time reentering. The longer they, you know, stayed out, the harder it was to reenter. And of course, it makes sense, right? If you're out for 5, 6, 7 years, you're becoming part of that long-term kind of quote unquote unemployed, and it's hard to get back in. However, interestingly, the vast majority, as I said, were able to find 67% were able to find a job within 6 months, no matter how long they had been in. And 69% told us that, in fact, within a year, they were back on track professionally and they were able to kind of rock it as they were before they had actually even paused their career. To me, that was astounding and completely new news and completely debunks the narrative about women's career paths.
Yeah, because on my end of things, obviously, I own a recruiting company. And it is interesting because so often we kind of joke about it. If we're covering a temp maternity leave coverage, we say, well, you know, the odds are the person might not come back. And I find it to be kind of split, honestly, because you get sometimes these type A women who you would never expect to want to leave the workplace, who are thriving, either attorneys or high up in their careers. And yet they choose to stay at home for 6 months, a year, 2 years. And then you have the flip happen where sometimes you have these people who you don't expect to come back, who don't seem as invested in their careers, who do come back for some reason or another. And so I haven't found in the recruiting side of things that there's been significant research as to, yes, this person will come back, no, this person won't come back, which, trust me, a lot of the employers I work with would love to have that sort of information.
Well, right. It's you know, what's the secret recipe on that? And we have to acknowledge that we're all individuals. Our situations are individuals, right? We don't know what our life is going to be like once we have parents. We don't know what it's going to be like with our partners, assuming we have partners, et cetera. So each of us have to navigate that world on our own. What we do know, though, is most of the women I speak to don't want to lose their careers. Even if they choose to pause or leave the paid workforce, in their minds, they're not trying to do this forever. They're doing this because they actually find that they can't maintain their career at the level before they, you know, before they pause. And so they've got to figure out how to navigate this. One of the things I found was really interesting is that the women who never paused, so this is the 28% of women who never paused. I asked them, why didn't you leave? You know, why didn't you leave? What happened? And I found three key things. One, they actually had employers that offered them flexibility. They were able to on-ramp in a way that really worked with them. And once in their jobs, they didn't face or sense that they faced motherhood bias. So if they had to leave to go to their daughter or son's soccer game or whatever it might be, or dentist appointment or whatever, their employer didn't view them as not as committed. In other words, we see that happening again and again for many women, right? If a guy goes out and says, hey, I'm going to my son's soccer game, he's a hero. If a woman goes out and says, I'm going to my son's soccer game, oh, she's not committed. And in fact, the women who never paused told me that wasn't their reality, that their employers totally supported them and gave them control of their time. The other thing that we found is they had partners, most of them had partners, and those who did have partners, their partners had flexible schedules as well, so that they were really partners with their partners in terms of caring for the children. So they were able to actually navigate the world together as couples. And so that was the other secret magic that literally allowed them to never pause their career because they didn't have to. But for the 72% of women who did pause their career, i.e. the vast majority, when I asked them why, the vast majority said it was because the workplace was so punishing and I couldn't have control of my time. And so the only way to regain control was for me to downshift or pause my career so I could actually, you know, be engaged with my family or, you know, figure out how to create something new in my career path.
Yeah, it's interesting for me owning a company and having had a lot of working moms and dads who have worked with my company. It wouldn't even occur to me not to give somebody a flexible schedule, because in my case, I've always given my employees work from home schedules. All of my employees at one point all had children. You know, they would come into the office, or if they had something they had to do, then I would just expect they would make their hours up somewhere else. And I could see where that's not the norm, especially like you and I were talking about earlier, a lot of law firms and more typical conservative corporations might not even be set up that way. Whereas myself owning a boutique company, we have a lot more malleability in what hours we work with our clients and giving people the freedom and flexibility, which I did just even lose one employee over it. Actually, one of my employees who I really adored was working part-time. She left a big corporate law firm job to come work for us 25 hours a week. And she realized her daughter's now 3 and is no longer as young as she was and requires more attention. And she left the workplace entirely because she said, you know, my husband makes enough money and I feel like I'm not being 100% there with my daughter, and I'm being short-tempered with her, even with only working 25 hours a week and working from home part-time. So even with flexible schedules, I think that people can still have different confrontations that they're going to face in their home work-life balance.
I think that's right. And I think, you know, I also spoke to many, many women who never paused when their children were young. And then when the children hit high school, found that the demands of high school and preparing for college or whatever was a time that they felt the need to downshift. One of the women I interviewed for my book, her name is Monica Johnson. She was a very successful chief financial officer at a number of Silicon Valley startups where I live. I live in Silicon Valley. And she downshifted. For a period of time with her kids were in high school, and just a year ago, relaunched to a great success, working now as a CFO in a venture capital firm. Actually, ironically, her dream job that she'd always wanted all along. So her pause actually inspired her to get the job she wanted, which was absolutely a story I heard again and again. But the point being, and then the other group that we saw, that I saw pausing, were women who never paused with children ever. And then when they had to care for their parents, they were forced to downshift or pause their careers to care for their family. So the real issue isn't for me about parenting per se, although that was the focus of the book. What I uncovered was a real bias in this country towards caregiving. But in fact, we don't support in many cases those of us with caregiving responsibilities, which, by the way, are the vast majority of us, and particularly women. And so as a result, we are often forced to kind of create our own solutions as opposed to have solutions that allow us to truly thrive.
Yeah, I think that's it is such an interesting time, because again, I see it with my grandmother who's getting older and my mother or sister who are sharing the responsibilities of caring for your grandmother. And it's something that we just don't think about. I think in other cultures, they're much more adept at kind of the whole it takes a village to raise a child sort of a thing. And also, I think to take care of the elders. And I think that we perhaps, and this is just my opinion, are so capitalist and so money oriented that we don't necessarily have the same support system that we would if we were in another culture. Did you learn anything about that, about cross cultures, how that might have impacted different groups of females?
Oh, I'll tell you, it was so eye-opening for me. So here's a couple, I'll throw out a couple of statistics for you that just blew my mind. So in the United States, the female workforce participation has stagnated at about 74%, according to the Office of Cooperation and Economic Development. And what they attribute that 74% stagnation to is our lack of female-friendly or family-friendly policies. What they've done is compared at almost every other industrialized nation relative to the U.S. in terms of family-friendly policies. And what they discovered is every other nation has many more policies, public policies that support families. So, for example, we're one of two countries, part of the 185 United Nations countries. We're one of two that doesn't offer paid maternity leave, right? The other is Papua New Guinea. Every single other country in this, yes, in the industrialized world actually offers paid maternity leave, right? The other things that we don't list are paid sick leave on a national basis, not tied to your employer, but actually underwritten by our tax dollars. We don't offer paid sick leave. We don't offer universal child care or high quality child care. I mean, the list goes on. And as a result, Spain, Greece, Japan, that's just a few of many of them, have much more female workforce participation than we do. So what are the net implications of that? it's basically an 11 to 15% hit to our GDP by not having women participate in the workforce fully. So we're hurting ourselves. And of course, we could cover all of these expenses that everyone says, oh, it costs too much to offer maternity leave on a national basis. And my answer back was, it costs too much not to. We're losing the economic benefit of having all these women working who are obviously could be buying, you know, things and could be investing in their families, but can't because they can't afford it. So, yeah, I was pretty shocked and dismayed to see some of the policies that other people have that we don't have and what it means to our economic well-being as a country.
Yeah, I wouldn't have even thought of that, but it makes a lot of sense is that you're not capturing a huge portion of the market that could be, like you said, working. And the other thing I've noticed from people who are working moms versus moms that stay at home 100% of the time, and I think both are equally great because obviously being a stay-at-home mom is a full-time job. However, the friends of mine and the people I know who are full-time stay-at-home moms, they sometimes struggle with their own personal happiness and balance because if you are a career-driven woman and you've built your career, that we relate our identity to it. And sometimes women can lose their identity in their children if they don't have some other substantive outlet where they feel like they can be contributing in a meaningful way to a group situation, an adult group situation, aside from just children. So I think it's a missing for a lot of moms who would love the opportunity to be able to have both, to be able to still work and contribute in some fashion or fashion, and to be able to still have that time, that important time with their children, right?
Well, it's you bring up a really good point. I always like to joke, when have we ever heard the term working dad? Right? We never say that because the truth, right? Because Jennifer, the truth is we actually still believe, we have this fantasy that it's an option for women to work in our country. And the truth of the matter is, for the vast majority of Americans, it's not an option. We need two career couples. Now, what we're finding and what I found in my research, which was deeply dismaying, is in many cases, that women desperately want to work and they can't. And for example, I spoke to a number of millennials who have, you know, lots of student debt, and they couldn't afford the cost of daycare and student debt at the same time. So the women had to stop working. These are women who wanted to be in the workforce, who really wanted to contribute, and they had to wait until their children got older so they could put them into school because they literally couldn't afford these two, you know, immovable costs in their lives. That to me is just heartbreaking. Then, of course, you do have the women who might have downshifted for whatever reason or paused because they wanted to or because they really felt shunned out by the workforce. And you're right. There's this identity question of what do I do? And I believe that's because in our society, you know, you're valued based on your pay. You're not necessarily valued based on what you contribute. But, of course, we know our school systems are all basically supported by unpaid volunteers, the vast majority are who typically are stay-at-home moms. So we've got this unpaid workforce that's contributing, you know, billions of dollars towards our, you know, towards our economy, but it isn't accounted for. And so we don't value it per se. So there you have it.
Oh my gosh. Yeah. And I didn't even think of that because you're right. Who are the people who run the PTAs and who do a lot of those skills? And that's one thing I do tell working moms, or sorry, moms who have paused and who are looking to get back in the workplace, is sometimes they forget that they have these amazing skills that they might have utilized, whether it was dealing with the PTA, volunteering, or things they did supporting their children while they were growing up, if they were out of the workforce for more than 2 or 3 years, like you said. It's amazing if you actually look at the wonderful skills that moms can develop doing things outside of the workplace. And like you said, there is still a huge missing where that could be part of, you know, people actually contributing and making money for themselves and for their families. So how do people thrive? How do people navigate this and actually thrive? What did you find from your research were perhaps some of the better ways to approach this situation of this pause, not pause? How long do you pause? What did you find?
Well, let's start with volunteering. We can talk about before you pause, but let me first start sort of while you're pausing. And what I found was these incredible, smart, strategic women who viewed themselves as always having a career, whether they were in the paid workforce or not. And so when they did volunteer, they very much volunteered strategically. So, for example, I interviewed a really phenomenal woman at Zuko Jenks. She actually chose to, her volunteer efforts were with her school board and PTA and round funding. fundraising. And she made a point of only doing fundraising where she was going into local CEOs and heads of companies, you know, in the C-suite and asking for money so that when she was ready to go back to work, she could call them up and say, hey, you remember when I asked you for all that money and I raised all that money for our, you know, school foundation? Well, guess what? I'm ready to go and do that to the workforce and I'd like to have your help. She was able to just navigate immediately back in the workforce. And she was out for, I think, over 10 years. Brilliant. So when I see people being really, yes, being smart and strategic about how they're navigating their, you know, pause, if you will, I'm so inspired. But again, let's go back to the higher message. What I really found is those who truly thrived never took their eye off of their career. Again, whether they were in the paid workforce, they always viewed themselves as having a career. And they viewed themselves as only temporarily being out of the paid workforce and always expected to go back in. So they kept their skills up to speed. They kept their network alive. They volunteered strategically. And they were not out for very long. Although what was interesting is there was a subgroup that actually was out repeatedly. They didn't just pause once. They paused two or three times. But in doing so, each time they sort of strategically used it to position themselves into a better and better position for their careers. And that was inspiring.
So when you say they paused numerous times, was that because they had more children or was it because they paused and then, like you said, they hit a different part of their child's life where they needed more attention? Or what was the reason for the various pauses?
It could have been, it was interesting. Some of them were family related. Some of them, you know, were my husband, I got laid off and I needed to figure it out. So I paused then. Some of it was we moved for our family moved. And so, you know, things just kind of kept, life kept getting in the way is what they kept telling me. And so what did they do? They innovated. They didn't stop their career. They kept being innovative and kept being resourceful and truly trailblazing. What I think of, millennials talk about having gig careers and going from gig to gig to gig. Well, guess what? That's already been done. And if you read my book, you'll meet, you know, thousands of women who've done it and done it successfully. And that to me was sort of very inspiring and very exciting to see.
Okay. And so it sounds like, so while you're in the midst of a pause, it's about keeping your skills fresh and staying relevant. So whether it's a 6-month pause or a 16-year pause, you're going to still stay relevant and keep your connections up. What about the before the pause? What happens before the pause?
Well, that was really inspiring as well. What I found is that the women who were able to successfully pause were very conscious about their choices. Let's start with kind of the obvious one, which is they chose partners who really were equally invested in their careers. In other words, they had partners who didn't expect them to be both superwoman at work and superwoman at home. What they expected them to be is partners in everything. So that kind of laid the foundation that even when they were out of the paid workforce, their partners were still committed to helping them nurture their careers along. That to me was really inspiring. So that starts it. They also chose companies that allowed them to truly thrive. So these companies had senior executives who had themselves either downshift or have partners or inspiring people like you who really understood that a great company is about supporting the talent. And so you're willing to look at people not based on face time per se, but based on how much they're contributing at any given moment. And so they were very strategic in the companies they chose to be with. The other thing that they did is that they were very, very conscious. If they were going to go out on maternity leave, if you will, they were conscious with their employers to say, I'm going to be out for whatever period of time. Let's talk about my on-ramping. Many of them actually had negotiated an on-ramp where they didn't come back immediately working 24/7, but they worked their way back into coming back after maternity leave. So they had a slower on-ramp, which allowed them to adjust into their new roles as a professional and a mother. And that to them was very successful as well. I like to joke that, you know, maternity leave is your first pause. So be conscious about your maternity leave and be conscious about how you on-ramp, right? Because you know, God knows lots of stuff can happen. To your point, it's some people leave.
Yeah, that's a great point. I've never heard that term on-ramping before, but from a recruitment sense, it actually makes a lot of sense in the marketplace, in the professional marketplace, because if you're If you're a contributor to your team and your company obviously wants to keep you, it would be in their highest and best interest and good as well as your own to create a strategic plan rather than to have the shock when you come back and have to deal with childcare or the shock for the employer of losing you if you decide you can't come back full time or do that job at full capacity. So I think it's wonderful that companies are looking into that. Is that something that you found a lot of bigger companies are now considering?
Absolutely.
Or is it really? That's wonderful.
Yeah, no. So Jennifer, it's so interesting. You asked that question at the beginning, which was, you know, you saw in law firms that you weren't ever sure who was going to leave and who was going to stay, right?
Right.
But what we're seeing is that when companies partner with women around the maternity leave strategy, that's one thing, right? Let me work on your maternity leave. But what they're forgetting to do is partner on the maternity return strategy. How can I get you back on track? Because you're committed to your career. You're a great employee. We don't want to lose you. I've already invested, I, the employer, I've already invested you on you so much. How can we keep you engaged? And the ones who are successful are the ones who really did have these on-ramping support systems. Many companies had coaching, whole coaching programs, not just for new moms, by the way, for new dads as well. We're hearing millennial dads saying, I want support as well because this is a new role for me and I need to figure this out. So here in Silicon Valley, we're dealing with a lot of tech firms, and a lot of the tech firms are very forward thinking around this issue. And they're not doing it just because they're good people. They're doing it because the average age of their employees is 30 and they're about to hit a tsunami of talent drain if they're not smart about this. 64 million millennials are expected to become parents the next decade. And if half of them, the women are all leaving, we got a problem. So this isn't just being a good corporate citizen. This literally is about the bottom line.
Yeah, it's about helping businesses be more effective and thrive. And I love what you keep saying over and over, Lisa, and is a wonderful word that I'm actually studying right now over the next year, is the word partnership. And something I'm learning about in this class that I'm in over the course of like 1 year intensive training is what distinguishes a partnership versus a relationship is partnership is two people who are on the same team who are up to some enterprise or to some better good and who are working towards a goal versus relationships are something that we just happen to fall into through happenstance. It could even be a marriage that's a relationship, but the two people aren't on the same side. And I loved how you brought that up earlier about some of the women who most successfully paused. It's that they saw their significant others, or whoever it was that was in this relationship, as true partners and really understood that you can't be superwoman at work and at home and that there's a little give and take there. And I think that's an important distinction for the listeners to understand is that when you partner with somebody, whether you're partnering with your employer, whether you're partnering with your significant other, your potential boss, it creates accountabilities and the ability to create a foundation for both people to, like you said, thrive, which is what it all comes down to, right?
Oh, you just said it so well, Jennifer. That's exactly right. What I found is the women who really, really thrived at work had bosses, like direct reports, that really wanted them to thrive. So these women or men who were their bosses were saying, how can I make you support you the best I can? And it wasn't about relationship. It truly was a partnership. Let's work it out together. So that was great bosses. But we also saw great companies who didn't look at their employees as just churn and burn. Oh, we're going to lose them next. But really focused on retention. How can I retain you? How can I help you? How can I, the organization, partner with you, the employee, to really bring your best self to work? What does that look like for you? And they were in it for the long game. They weren't just in it for the churn and burn. They literally were committed to seeing that, the getting the best out of their employee. And I think that is really at the heart of where this all could go and where it needs to go.
Yeah, I think it's great because we're seeing now too, what are your thoughts on people planning for later in life? I know you just mentioned millennials turning 30 and that a good percentage of them, 60%+, are going to be looking at having children in the near future. Do you think that that's still the timeline that a lot of people are thinking of? I know people are saying now 40 is the new 30. And, you know, I feel like with at least my friends, I'm in my, mid to late 30s, that we're seeing that a lot with our age group is most of the people I know who are business women are putting off having children until their late 30s or early 40s. And how is that going to impact people pausing in businesses?
Well, it's a really important question. And I want to deconstruct exactly this because I think it's so important. So let's start with the great thing. You know, my book is called Work, Pause, Thrive. So you've got to work first. you've got to have a foundation from which to pause from, right? Mm-hmm. If you don't have a great career from which to pause from, it's going to be hard for you to re-engage in your career. Or you can maybe you can create a new one, but you know, going back to where you were, it's going to be hard. And so I really think that building that important foundation, having, you know, having a series of successes under your belt, having a network, having a community who understands, yes, you are really good at this and I want to support your career, that really matters. And of course, the longer you're in career, that's great because the more likely you are to be at that point, right, where you're going to have it. That's the good news. That means that women who are having children a little later, the 35 to 40 plus age range, have more years of success under their belt. That's awesome. Then, unfortunately, there is that challenge called fertility.
Yes.
And what I heard again and again from experts that I spoke to was that they were deeply concerned about the concept of postponing your fertility and freezing your eggs, et cetera, because of the likelihood of risk to baby, the lack of ability to get pregnant, et cetera. So there's concern right there. And really, frankly, you, my friend, are right in the middle of this. We're doing market research. We're doing an unintentional study for college-educated millennial women who are going to tell us what the truth is in about 15 years when we find out how hard or not hard it is to postpone pregnancy. And we won't know for a long time. And obviously, every situation is different. Your friend might be able to have no problem getting pregnant, and it might not work for you. And no one knows what's true for them. The other thing that I found, which was really interesting, is that the challenge when you pause your career at 40, let's say, is that in many cases, that has historically been the height of someone's career. So if you leave the workforce right at the height of your career, what does that mean? Now, what we didn't talk about, which I found fascinating in my research, is I saw women taking sort of three key paths when they paused. One group, which I call cruisers, they never left the paid workforce. They downshifted to work part-time. They innovated solutions that allowed them flexibility. Either they became consultants or they, as I say, they negotiated with their own company to work part-time, et cetera. Those cruisers had the highest ability to re-enter to great success. The second group is a group who completely left the paid workforce and then boomeranged back to their previous industry and jobs. These are boomerangers. They're the ones we hear about the most who struggle about trying to get back in because in many cases, they're trying to get back into exactly where they were before. And that's not easy to do. Some can do it, but it's not easy. And so they're the ones who you hear, oh, it's so terrible. You can't get back in. It's going to kill your career. Not true necessarily. But for them, that was hardest. The third group that I found and uncovered in my research were women I call pivoters. And I'm a perfect example of that. And frankly, so are you.
Okay.
We are women who actually have one career. We innovate, we iterate, we pivot to something new, and that blossoms. And then we ultimately might pivot again. So in my case, you know, I was a vice president, foot cone belding advertising. I was in marketing. And, you know, that was my career before I had children and found I couldn't thrive as a mom in that environment, as you read, you know, shared in my bio. I left. I pivoted to become a journalist, writing, you know, about women work and so many great things for many, many, you know, really phenomenal media outlets. And then I pivoted again, and now I'm working with companies to help them attract, retain, and promote women because I don't want the next generation to have to go through what I went through, and I want companies to actually truly thrive. I want the women and the companies to absolutely get the best out of each other. And so that's what I do right now. And so my career has taken a number of different tastes and turns, and I saw that again and again with the women I interviewed. So, for example, I loved talking to, for example, a woman named Marianne Perrin. She was a director of operations in a number of companies, finance. She was very innovative. She paused her career, and now she's a professor at University of North Carolina, focusing on nutritional science. And she said to me, at 45, I went back to get my PhD. Who would have thought, right?
Wow.
So we see this incredible innovation, right? We see this incredible innovation happening all the time. We just don't necessarily hear about it because what we think about careers are these linear careers lockstepping to the top. And as you personally know, that's not what happens, right? We innovate, we come up with new solutions, we create new things. And that's what I think is so inspiring.
Yeah, I think this is great for any of our listeners out there. And I want to be clear, you know, we're talking about a lot about women because, like you said, it's not like anybody really talks about working dads or, you know, that whole genre, which is true. There are men out there, and hats off to you, who do spend a lot of time being the ones at home taking care of the kids. But this is relevant to men or to women. It just happens that right now, for the purposes of your book, you studied women predominantly, right?
Well, interesting you say that. I set out to study women and men just kept popping up. And here's what happened. And what happened here was that men kept telling me, this is my issue too. And what they were saying was either A, I want to be a deeply engaged dad and the workplace isn't allowing me to do that. And so me and my partner, we decided that one of us had to choose. So I ended up being the one that's all in and she didn't have the freedom to do that. And that didn't make either of us happy, right? That was one thing I kept hearing. Then I also heard from millennial dads who said, wait a minute, I married my true partner and this is not what we wanted. I didn't want to become the primary breadwinner and she didn't want to become the stay-at-home spouse, but this is the only solution we could come up with. And that's not making me happy. And of course, there's a large group of and growing group, significantly growing group of men who are actually playing the role of the one who downshifts or who pauses their career, if you will. So I tell the story of Anne-Marie Slaughter went to Fortune's Most Powerful Woman event, and she shared in her book, Unfinished Business, about how she asked them, you know, the 2,200 top women in industry, you know, how many of you had kids and most of them raised their hands, and how many of you had stay-at-home husbands and most of them raised their hands. Because you can't be in today's climate, you can't be a senior executive and not have a partner at home who's taking care of the vast majority of your needs. It's really hard to do that. And why is it? It's because our workplace is structured around the ideal worker. And that's, of course, the worker that has no obligations at home or has someone taking care of their obligations so they can be available 24/7, travel the drop of a hat, and, you know, it's no big deal. But that's just not the reality, again, back to the modern American families, right? Most of us have to have dual career families just to get by.
Yeah, and I think you raised an interesting point, which is funny. I didn't plan it this way, but it ties right into our guest next week, Lee Stringer. And she and I were talking earlier a little bit about how do you create health and balance in the workplace? And I think it's something that employers are up against a wall right now trying to figure this out. And whether it's just your personal health, your family's health, balance between work and life and family, I think it's something that never before have we seen this happening in the workplace? You know, back in when women started to go to work in the 40s and when things started to shift and they weren't always sitting at home and then women began to take on more significant roles in different workplace environments. I think this is where everything's cyclical and happens in 40 years. And so I think right now we're just starting to see employers go, oh, crap, this is not a new problem. This is something that we've all of a sudden now been, you know, dealing with for 40 years and it's come to a crux. And like many things, it's going to have to pendulum back to a place of balance. I think we've gone from one extreme to another, and now where we're at is getting to synthesis and finding a place where we can find balance of what does work for families that are two-income families trying to raise two children or one child or what that looks like, and how do we have workability and partnership between employers and employees and husbands and wives or significant others and spouses? How does that show up in the workplace?
I love the way you've said that. And Jennifer, what I would say is that the vast majority of women I interviewed and surveyed told me that they believed it was their quote unquote choice to pause their career. But the reality is they were burned out. They were burned out by a workplace that didn't allow them to thrive as both, you know, highly engaged, committed professionals and highly engaged, committed mothers. So they had to quote unquote choose. Well, fine if you have that either financial resources to do that or have a partner who can support you or you're willing to take the risk and invest yourself and your human capital in somebody else, right? Not so great if you're forced out because you can't afford childcare and student loans. Really not so great if you can't even cover the cost of diapers, which is true for the vast majority of under-resourced women because welfare doesn't cover diapers. So you can't go in to a daycare if you don't have diapers and you can't afford diapers because you can't, you know, they're so expensive. So long story short, we've got this locked-in model, right? So yeah, I am thrilled to see companies are finally giving attention to this in a way that they haven't ever before. And we're seeing some real innovation. Here's my favorite innovation that I can't wait to share with your listeners. And this is this innovation that we're seeing now really come to fruition in so many companies. It's called the Return to Work Internship. Hmm. A woman named Carol Fishman Cohen, who is the CEO of iRelaunch, has really been spearheading this effort. Carol is working with companies like IBM, Goldman Sachs, you know, I mean, the list goes on, Coursera, GoDaddy. I mean, there's a whole bunch of companies and all across this country. that are launching these return to work internships for people who've paused their careers. It could be for women or men, and giving them an entree to build their skills up quickly, sort of a try and buy it, if you will, on both sides. I think something, Carol was telling me, something closer to 90 to 100% of the people are getting hired after these return to work internships. Wow. Because companies are realizing this is great talent. They've been out of the workforce for a period of time. We want to make sure that, you know, we're a little nervous, which I think is sort of ridiculous. But anyway, to say that, we're a little nervous. Let's try and buy, right? Because you know, you've been out and your skills aren't good. You just raised kids. Oh my God. But anyways, companies are trying it and it's hugely successful. So I think that innovation alone is a real recognition that the mid-career person, those women in their early, late 30s, early 40s, who might need to, for whatever reason, pause their career for a period of time, certainly are highly valuable. And here's a great way to keep them engaged or get them back in really quickly so we can continue to build that pipeline to leadership that we're so desperately want and need.
I think that's a wonderful idea. I've never heard of that. So it's called a return to work internship. And the whole purpose of that is to help the women, or is it for men too, or specifically for women? Just so I'm clear.
Absolutely. No, okay. Absolutely. Anyone who's paused their career to care for family, typically for those who've cared for family, are invited to apply to these return to work internships. You can go to irelaunch.com. and check out their resources there. Another organization that's doing it is called pathforward.org. And they're focused in the tech industry and almost primarily in engineering, I think, if I have that accurate. But again, we're seeing this again and again. This is a huge, when I started writing the book 3 years ago, this was very uncommon for companies to have it. It was an anomaly. And in 3 short years, it's becoming more and more common. I'm working with a number of advertising agencies right now who are launching return to internships because we have such a dearth of women and mid-career women in advertising. We're seeing in the tech industry, we're seeing lots of 60% of women in STEM leave their careers, 42% go home to care for their children. And now we're seeing these companies create these return to work internships to get the women back. So not only are they trying to resolve the pipeline into it, but the pipeline back into these careers in tech. So that's exciting. That's a huge change.
That is wonderful. I want to make sure to re-mention those websites that you just said. So I think you said one is irelaunch.com. Is that correct? Did I hear you right on that?
That's exactly correct. irelaunch.com.
Perfect.
And the other one forward. Is pathforward.org.
Oh,
both of those are working with both of those are working with companies to create return to work internships. And you can just Google whatever your industry is. You can Google return to work internship financial services, and up will come JP Morgan, Goldman Sachs, Morgan Stanley. They're all creating them. You know, that's financial services, advertising, GTB, Momentum, tons of agencies are doing it. Tech, Coursera, GoDaddy, whatever industry you're in, I am betting you right now you can find a return to work internship.
Oh my gosh, I think this is brilliant. You've given our listeners so many wonderful tips on how to pause, how to thrive in their workplace, and how to have work for them, especially with wanting to have a family, be it male or female, looking to re-enter or to pause in the workplace. So I think that everybody should go out and buy your book. Please tell our listeners where they can find out more information, where they can buy the book.
Thanks for asking. So Work, Pause, Thrive, How to Pause Your Parenting Without Killing Your Career is available online, Amazon, Barnes & Noble. You can find it in your local bookstore. I encourage you to support your independent bookstores. And of course, you can find out more about me at www.leesenstromberg.com. And that's LeesenStromberg.com. And you can also find me on Twitter at LeesenStromberg.
Please. And it's been such a joy to have you on the show. And for our listeners out there who want to learn more, maybe you're not planning on having children, but you want to find more about work-life balance and how to have more health in the workplace and workability, or if you're an employer and you want to know how to create that for your employees, please do tune in next week to our interview with Lee Stringer, who's going to be talking about how do you create that balance of health and well-being in the workplace, which, as we've just spent the last 45 minutes talking about, is so critical right now to where employers are going and what we you need in order to be able to thrive and to partner with employees and employers. And as a reminder, you can always find us on iTunes. If you missed any portion of the show or you want to listen to it again later, you can listen to it under Get Yourself the Job on iTunes and download and subscribe. Listen at your leisure. I just discovered something funny. A friend of mine was on a podcast and I have very limited amount of time. And you know what she said? She said, Jen, please listen to my podcast. You can listen to it at 1.5 times the speed and that way you can listen to it quicker. So it's kind of funny because she sounded like Donald Duck, but it was a wonderful podcast and I was able to listen to a 45 minute podcast in 20 minutes. So I highly recommend it. If you haven't listened to podcasts, I promise I won't take it personally if you listen to us quickly. And finally, you can also, if you have any comments for myself, Lisen, any of our guests, or you want to have particular guests or questions answered on the show, you can go to our Facebook page, facebook.com/getyourselfthejob, and we welcome any questions, comments, or suggestions that you might have about topics you would love to hear on the show. So thank you again to all of our listeners. Thank you so much to Lisen for sharing your wonderful wisdom and your book and all the research you did. And have a wonderful rest of your week, everybody. Thanks.
You're listening to Get Yourself the Job with Jennifer Hill, only on LA Talk Radio.